Welcome to my podcast, where I share true stories of survival, overcoming obstacles, and failure. These stories will inspire and motivate you, as well as provide you valuable wisdom and lessons learned to help you face the challenges of life, and most importantly, keep you in the fight. This story takes place in Fairbanks, Alaska, 1984. So we're going to go way back. I was 9 years old at the time. And if you don't know the geography of Alaska, I bet you do know it's a big place. Fairbanks is situated right in the center, about the center of Alaska. And with Alaska, it can be very cold. But also in the summer times, it can be rather pleasant. Good summers. The sun tends to stay up in the sky most of the day, sometimes all day long. And we had been living at my grandfather's house at the time. We had moved in there. It was a big log cabin that he had built, and probably my dad had helped build there in what is known as North Pole, Alaska. Now, it's not in the North Pole, but pretty darn close. Fairbanks is situated 500 miles north of Anchorage, where many people are. When you talk about Alaska, you think of the capital, which I've never actually been to, way down in Juneau, pretty far away, down on the west coast of Alaska, down the panhandle. And Anchorage, as you go in up north, is the first and major city there. And then drive on a bumpy road north to Fairbanks, if you look at it on the map or in Google Earth, right in the center. There's a couple of military bases out there, Fort Wainwright, Eielson Air Force Base, and a bunch of very small towns situated. If you look 50 to 100 miles in the radius of Fairbanks, Alaska, there's a bunch of little tiny small towns. There's cool geography all around, no doubt about it. Denali National Park, the second highest mountain, Mount McKinley, in the world is there as well. It's a vast open country and wilderness, and also a place where people go to disappear, right? Whether they're Vietnam veterans or just a little bit off the rocker, they want to be homesteaders, they want to not be found, or they're a little bit loose in the head. They find themselves in Alaska. And in kind of recollecting this story about being almost kidnapped, as you'll hear, at a young age of 9, there's all sorts of stuff that happened back in the 80s, in the 70s, in the early history of Alaska. And I think I'll have a few other episodes on that. As I was speaking with my dad about all the interesting things that happened back then when he was there, both working in the oil fields on the North Slope and just being there for a long time. Anyway, like I said, go back to 1984. I was 9 years old, and typical nine-year-old, like playing in the streets, playing with my friends, building snow forts in the wintertime. But this particular incident happened in the summer. I had a paper route in that area with the homes. And back then, a paper route consisted of picking up a bunch of newspapers. They were tied up with rubber bands, and you would drive around to the different – not drive around. For me, it was on my bike, and you would put all the newspapers in either around your chest in kind of a satchel type thing or on your bike, and you'd have 30, 40 papers, and you would ride around the neighborhood throwing the papers as best you could up to the front porch or on the driveway. I don't think I really ever put them in the mailbox. Maybe I did. Sometimes they would have a separate box for the newspapers that you would put it in back in the day when people actually read newspapers. And that was a major source of news in the area. I think it was called the Newsminer was the name of the paper. I don't know. I could be wrong. Anyway, newspaper route at a young age, trying to make a little spare change, and my dad out there saying, "Hey, go do something with yourself and get out there and, you know, get out of the house," kind of thing. So I can remember distinctly on the newspaper route, there's a few houses that were pretty sketchy, and a few houses that had some big dogs, and throwing the newspapers in there or riding by the house, you know, pissed the dogs off and they would run after me and I'd have to, you know, get on my bike and just cycle for my life to get away from them. I didn't particularly like it. I wanted to go play and go do things or just tromp around in the woods. Being an only child, that's what you did. There was no cell phones to zone out on video games or scroll or whatever. So you just had to make up things. And that's at 9 years old, that's what you did, right? I can remember distinctly my grandfather. He owned a construction company. He was a concrete mason and did various jobs, and he had a crew. And I think my dad helped out as part of that crew, and waking up early and having breakfast was a big deal. And if you didn't wake up, you didn't get breakfast, or you were left with the girls, and they'd be up early, 4:35 a.m., having hot cakes and sausage and bacon, coffee, and you're out the door to go work. And I thought that was pretty cool. Trying to wake up, try to be around the men, doing men's stuff. Yes, I had to stay home with mom and whoever was at home, but I can remember that. Hey, if you didn't get up, you didn't get breakfast, you had to fend for yourself. So it was kind of cool to kind of see that work ethic and a lot of what my dad instilled in me, just good work ethic. Not that I was working with him or at that young age, but anyway, back to the story. That particular day, I wanted to go fly a kite, and down the road from my grandfather's house, a few streets away in this wooded area where these homes were spaced out. It wasn't like homes back to back. There was a wooded area, then a home, then a wooded area and a home. And there was quite a bit of land each person had. And there was no homeowners association or anything like that. This was kind of in the suburbs, but very wooded area. But there was a park in the area for the kids to play at. In this particular park, it was just a big open grassy field. And the wind would pick up in the early afternoon. And got to figure out something to do, right? Had a kite, going to go take it down to the park. And heck, in 1984, sure, get out of the house, boy. Go do things. Go just stay out of trouble, you know. So got the kite, got it all ready, going to get on my bike. And now, you know, I think I didn't even ride my bike down there. Or maybe I did. I mean, it's a long time ago, so I had to talk with my dad to kind of piece things together a little bit, especially some of the details. I go to the park, big open field. It's probably 2 football fields across. It's what it seemed like to me at all of 9 years old, maybe smaller. I get there on my bike, lean it up against the fence, go through there, and I don't know, there's really nobody there. I'm pretty sure it didn't have any kind of playground. I think there was a spot for a baseball diamond, that sort of thing. But either side had a road on it. And I think it was just dirt roads. It was just dirt roads leading to different houses that went parallel to the park. Anyway, go through the fence there, leave my bike on the side of the fence, and go out there and start to kind of get my kite ready for what I would... What would it be trying to fly this thing? Wind was pretty good, so I really didn't have any trouble getting all of the stuff with the kite ready and getting it up in the air. I can remember looking at it and like, yeah, pretty stoked with myself at 9, getting this thing up in the air and kind of flying it. And I wasn't there for too long, and off of my periphery, I noticed a van pull up on the other side of the park, which was the far side. I was closer to the fence where my bike was, maybe 50 to 75 yards in. And then there was the far side of the park, and this van had pulled up. And my spidey sense kind of went off a little bit. It was the creepy van, right? With the sliding door. White van. I don't know if there's dark windows or not, but your brain kind of does that to you. Like, oh, that was a creepy van with dark windows. And I don't know, I didn't make much of it other than I noticed it. There was a car that pulled up. There wasn't any other cars around because on either side of the park it just was woods, and so you couldn't really. There was I don't know if there's anywhere to park, but anyway, van pulls up. My radar goes off a little bit. I'm still flying the kite. I got to focus on that, and then this man steps out of the van. It's obviously there for a reason. There's nobody else there. I couldn't, in my mind at the time, as I try to remember this, I couldn't figure out, okay, so he steps out of it, what's he doing? I'm trying to fly the kite, pay attention to that, but also pay attention to this gentleman, very overweight, heavy set guy. I can remember distinctly the look on his face. I think he had glasses on. I don't know, just pedophile type. Now that I think about it, just like, oh man, who's this? He walks from his van through the fence and is walking directly at me. And would, you know, I had to make a decision at that point, at 9 years old. He wasn't aggressively running at me at the time. He was just walking towards me, but there was nothing else. There was nobody else around. There was no other parents. And my little 9-year-old brain, that's when the first kind of inner voice said, run. And I didn't listen to that voice at first. Oh, hey, I'm holding on to this kite. I don't want to lose my kite. If I run, I gotta let go of the kite. I don't have another one. It's gonna go somewhere. This guy is an adult. He probably just wants to ask me a question. And my brain was starting to rationalize why not to run. And a second time, my inner voice said, run now. And that's when I listened. I looked over at this gentleman coming towards me, now quicker and a faster pace, and he started to run at me. And at that moment, I ran. Good thing I was a wiry little 9-year-old because I could run pretty fast. And this heavy set, overweight guy, he couldn't keep up with me. I didn't look over my shoulder. The last thing I remember was letting go of my kite and running. And he was a few yards before he got to me because I didn't listen to my inner voice and run when I should have, he could have caught me. I ran as fast as I could. I could hear him behind me, heavy breathing, and running after me across the field. I got to the fence. Thankfully, I don't know, his inner voice telling me not to look over my shoulder and not to pause, not to get on my bike. But that bike was pretty important to me, just as important the kite was. But I listened again and kept moving and kept running. I got out on the road and ran as fast as I could back to my grandfather's house where my dad was. And I was scared out of my mind, right? This guy's going to come after me. I didn't say anything for a little bit. I kind of sat in silence and like it wasn't got there and started screaming and from what I remember, I didn't, oh my gosh, this guy, I was kind of traumatized by the whole thing. Here's somebody that I don't know running after me, probably with ill intent, and my brain is just firing with adrenaline, with everything from running the, I don't know how far it was, a half mile, as fast as I could back to my house. Was he going to get in his van? Was he going to come after me as I was running down the road? I didn't know. All I could focus on was getting safely back to my grandfather's house where my dad was. 'Cause I needed to be safe. Eventually, I think my dad and my mom were like, hey, what's going on? You're quiet. What happened? Where's your kite? Where's your bike? And I shared that, hey, I had somebody run after me and tried to, I don't know if I said kidnap me or what. I just said, ah, this creepy guy. Somebody ran after me. My kite's back there. I don't know what to do. obviously, as a parent, everything kicks in. Hey, let's go. Let's call the police. I'm sure my dad at the time probably could have taken him out. He was a pretty tough guy. And call the police. And let's go find this person. Who knows who this person is? He's in our neighborhood. He's trying to kidnap kids. It's kind of fuzzy. But what my dad was saying is that a police officer from the Alaska State Troopers met up with my dad, met up with me, and they found the guy. He had actually went back and collected my kite. And I can remember sitting in the back of the officer's squad car, and they were questioning him, and he had given the officer the kite. And I'm unclear what I said to him. I identified the guy. And you know what? I think I was surprised by they couldn't do anything. Nothing. He had made up some story that I think they had gone and checked in with where he lived. He lived with his parents in the neighborhood, and he was mentally challenged. And his parents, this is an older gentleman, older from what I was. I mean, who knows if he was 20s or 30s, but still living with his parents, but he was mentally challenged, and he just wanted to go out and, you know, and play with me. God knows what that means. And I think everybody knew. I think my dad was like, wow, how do I just go and kill this guy? You know, so probably the officer too. Just didn't believe anything, but legally they couldn't really do anything. Nothing was done to me. And so he handed the kite back to the officer or my dad, and that was it. And, you know, the point of this whole story, really, as I was recounting the last couple episodes, listening to him, the story, if you heard from Gun Down, the last one about Ross Capocone, he had that inner voice that kind of spoke up and said, hey, there's something going on here, something I need to alert you to. Their brain was firing off with some red flags about a situation, and he was able to navigate through a terrible situation. Back in episode 44, where I shared the story of kind of a sketchy situation in Egypt, same thing. Your inner voice is really important part of your life, and how do you listen to that more? Just think, if I wouldn't have listened to that inner voice and trusting what I call my spidey sense, trusting that gut feeling that comes up, because every one of you listening to this has felt that before. And what's a strange thing with your brain is it tries to rationalize that. It actually goes against it, because what was happening when the first time my inner voice said, run from this person, bad things are going to happen, I didn't listen to him. My other part of my brain came in and said, oh no, worry about your kite. Oh, he just wants to ask you a question, this, that, right? All these social norms that start to come in at a very young age of, oh, you don't want to upset anybody. Or think about the time, oh, hey, let's take this shortcut down this dark alleyway. Red flags go off. Oh, it's not a big deal. It's safe. It seems dark, but this and that. And your brain can sabotage you in that way. It saves you, but at the same time, it can rationalize it to where you go, oh no, I'll just talk to this creepy guy who's walking up on me in a park in the middle of nowhere. Oh no, that's not a big deal. And thank God I listened to that second run for your life. Well, I guess it was a third, right? Don't get on your bike. If I would have stopped, take for a moment, try to get on my bike and get that thing going, he could have been on me. And probably a good chance that I wouldn't be here today recounting this story. You know, so you may ask, like, well, all right, Justin, that's pretty good, but how do you listen to that inner voice more? I don't observe those things. I felt like I was always a kid that observed everything, right? Maybe it was from being an only child. Maybe it was from that particular situation. I mean, after that, I was hyper aware of everything, right? Because think about it, it's probably a good chance he didn't just come upon me. It's probably a good chance that he's seen me in the neighborhood before. You know, pretty soon after that, the paper route stopped. I think it was very wise of my dad to say, hey, you know what, maybe he saw you around on the paper route and figured, oh yeah, he's by himself. Oh, here's a perfect time. Oh, there he is in the park. I can go and grab this kid. Maybe that's the case. And being aware of those things can really save you. You know, also what can save you is knowing when your brain is trying to rationalize a situation and you need to fight against it and go, hey, this gut feeling is telling me something. And why do I feel this way? Making the decision or just stopping a second and going, hey, what is my brain trying to tell me here with that initial red flag? And it's maybe not just a situation to kind of wrap this whole thing up, but maybe it's an interaction with somebody. You go, I kind of feel a weird feeling about that person. I don't know what it is. But right in a social setting, you just rationalize it again. Your brain goes, oh, no, you don't want to say anything, or you don't want to bring up anything, or it's not a big deal. This person knows this person. Well, your brain is really attuned to that, especially if it's a situation or a person that kind of sets off those alarm bells. And so I thought that story was just a really good way of bringing home to listen to your inner voice. It may save you, may keep you out of danger, may keep you from getting hurt, may keep you out of a terrible relationship, may keep you from getting into a partnership with somebody that you shouldn't, or keep your kids away from somebody that shouldn't be there, right? You know, those red flags are really important, especially if they stack up. Oh, he did this. I mean, it's hard to change somebody's nature because the nature comes out in ways and they can't fight it. And if you're more observant to it, you can pick up on those kind of things. And so there it is. Listen to your inner voice more. I know that saved me from getting kidnapped back in 1984. As I was going through that story with my dad a little bit and kind of filling in the gaps. He's got a great memory. The officer who actually was there for that incident, who responded to it, his name is Troy Duncan. And he was, I'm going to have this on another podcast, I'm sure. He was tragically killed, taking out a serial killer, I think like a month later, very short time after he responded to my attempted kidnapping. And I looked into that and I was like, oh my gosh, that is a radical story. My dad knew it right away from the top of his head. And so I might put that all together because it's a radical story that definitely applies to what I'm talking about here. So there it is. Listen to your inner voice. See you on the next episode.